From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter. Made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from Eskenazi Health. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. Duke Tomato loves to play the blues and has a new album on its way in a few weeks. Phoenix Rising Dance Company sets choreography on David Bowie's Afraid of Americans. Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen are taking their love of TV on the road. All of that and more are ahead on today's show. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All that and much more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week we'll discover a documentary being shot in Indianapolis and hear about Not Like the Rest of Us, an anthology collecting work by more than 70 Hoosier authors. But first, CNN anchor Anderson Cooper and late-night TV talk show host Andy Cohen are bringing their two-man show to Indianapolis in March. The two have been friends for decades and share a love and respect for broadcasting, despite their very different roles in it. Cooper has spent the last 23 years covering major news events from around the world, while Cohen is creator and producer of the Real Housewives television series. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer talked with Anderson Cooper about their March show and about how he and Andy Cohen met.
And we were actually set up on a blind date because, you know, we had mutual friends who said, oh, you're both in news. We were both kind of starting out in our careers. And we never actually had the date. We had a phone call to set up the date. And within about 2 minutes, I realized there's no way I'm going to go on a date with this guy, because I imagined him sort of, he was very enthusiastic, and I kept imagining him like gesticulating a lot. And I don't know, I just realized we were not compatible at all. So luckily we never had the date, but we became very, very good friends.
Well, I think I'm laughing because I think the same thing too. I watch his show. I watch you. I've read his book. I've read some of your books, and that's what I think is maybe the most alluring about the two of you coming together for this intimate evening of conversation. Because I would think you guys are literally just night and day.
Yeah, it's like Oscar Madison and Felix Unger. It's like the Odd Couple. I mean, you know, especially the worlds we operate in now. I mean, he's sort of the king of pop culture, and you know, spends days with the housewives of various cities, and I spend days with politicians and covering, you know, world events and traveling around the world. So we definitely, you know, come from kind of different interests. But oddly, in terms of a night out, it's really fun just because it's kind of, we want it to be a kind of a fun night out for people and a peek behind the scenes of pop culture and world events. And it's also nice to have a friend who actually, you know, who works in live television. And even though very different kinds of television, it's, you know, there are some kind of odd things that happen when you work in television. It's just sort of weird experiences that pop up and just odd things that happen. And it's nice to have somebody you can call throughout the day and say, like, you know what, did this happen to you too? Or did you get this offer as well? And in fact, recently I was offered to be on Oprah Winfrey's show Where Are They Now on the OWN network, and I was sort of kind of insulted. Not insulted, I mean, I love Oprah Winfrey certainly, but I was sort of like, where am I now? Like, I think I'm doing okay still. Like, I didn't think I was in like the Where Are They Now file. You know, I thought maybe, you know, maybe that would, I didn't know I was kind of on the downward slope of my career, and so I called up Andy. I was like, you know, this weird thing happened. I got this offer being Where Are They Now, and he was like, oh my god, I got the same offer too, and I was so insulted by it. So I thought it was funny.
I agree. He can kind of almost be your like your counter intuition kind of thing. He can say the things sometimes maybe that you wish you could say.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, he gets away with asking questions which I can never ask people in a million years. I mean, obviously we're kind of interviewing different people, but he asks people on his show things which I just can't believe that they answer, let alone that he's asked them. I think people know he's on their side. He's not he's not making fun of them. He's having fun with them, and I think that's a really good ability to have.
Well, he is such a sincere fan of television.
Oh my God! I mean, there's not anybody I know who enjoys and loves pop culture more, who enjoys their celebrity and their fame more. But I know for a fact that, I mean, this is who he is, because I've read his letters from summer camp when he was a kid, and like when he's like 7 years old, and it's all about, you know, Princess Di and Diana Ross and the silliest letters you've ever heard from a seven-year-old, but they're all about the stuff he does now on a nightly basis.
And how has the show evolved since you guys first started it, from doing it to what's coming up in March when you're here?
Yeah, you know, it changes with over time, obviously. You know, at this point, we know what stories people enjoy and what stories really work, and then what stories we tell well. And, you know, it's very loosely organized. It's basically, you know, an interview, each of us interviewing each other. It's really a conversation between two old friends, kind of, you know, a peek behind the curtain of news and pop culture. But it's also, and then we open it up to questions toward the end so people can, but we really want it to be kind of an interactive and intimate night out of conversation, like going out to a bar with us or going out, not that I drink, but Andy certainly does drink. So at this point, we kind of know what stories work, but then we're constantly trying to add in new things as new things happen to us and new encounters happen to us. Andy has more bizarre celebrity encounters than anyone I've ever met. I don't particularly enjoy talking to celebrities. I don't really know what to talk to them about more often than not. But Andy seems to run into them just about every day, even like while walking his dog, and always has these bizarre interactions with them. And you know, people ask me about the latest in what I've been doing, moderating presidential debates, or the latest in politics, or whatever it may be.
And that's what I wondered about too. Do you have to kind of draw a line for yourself of what you can and can't share with the audience in that situation, or are you, because you're out of the newsroom and you're in this different setting, are you able to let your hair down a little bit more?
You know, we definitely kind of talk more about things than I would on the air. I mean, it's much more kind of behind the scenes of what it's actually like to moderate a presidential debate, you know, kind of the behind the scenes of, you know, when dealing with the candidates and things like that. But it's not, you know, a full-time tour. We both have a number of full-time jobs, so it's kind of an occasional tour. We kind of jokingly call it a tour, but you know, when our schedules permit, we book theater, and like we have in Indianapolis, and it's a great way to spend a weekend with, you know, with one of your best friends, and, you know, see a great city and meet new people, and also just have fun. It's really nice to be able to, in this day and age, show yourself as more than one-sided, to show yourself as, you know, the full range of stuff you're interested in, and that you can, you know, be a serious person, but also, you know, laugh about yourself and laugh, you know, and have a good time and tell funny stories and help people have a fun night out.
WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer with Anderson Cooper. Tickets are on sale now for An Intimate Evening with Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, Deep Talk and Shallow Tales. It's one night only, Friday, March 10th at the Murat Theater at Old National Center. Not Like the Rest of Us is the Indiana Writers Center's new anthology collecting 78 notable Indiana poets, essayists, and fiction writers. These authors range from 20-something to 90-something, and they hail from throughout the state. I invited the Writers Center's executive director, Barb Shoup, to share how the anthology came about and to tell us about some of the class offerings of the center.
So you've been really busy publishing this fall, two anthologies. Let's talk about Not Like the Rest of Us first.
Not Like the Rest of Us is an anthology of contemporary Indiana writers that features 78 notable Indiana poets, fiction writers, and essayists. Wonderful writers that include Marianne Baruch, Jared Carter, Mari Evans, Karen Joy Fowler, Scott Russell Sanders, John Green. So those are all names that people who know anything about Indiana writers know are wonderful writers. So we're excited about the anthology. It's people who are working and writing in Indiana now, and also people with close connections to Indiana who were born and raised here but don't necessarily live here anymore. So,
and the title comes from a Kathy Day essay,
the
right?
The title, which I love, Not Like the Rest of Us, comes from an essay by Kathy Day that's in the book that's called Not Like the Rest of Us, a Hoosier named Cole Porter. And it comes from a conversation that she has with her grandmother, at which she's trying to understand why she never knew anything about Cole Porter until she grew up and went away. And her grandmother's being a little defensive. And at some point she said, well, he's not like the rest of us. and Kathy said, yeah, he's better. But I think, you know, writers are not like the rest of us. Artists are not like the rest of us. And I thought it was kind of a fun title to play with. And I don't think it matters where you're from. I think that's true.
Yeah, and I love that and I know we don't have time to exhaust the list of all of the 75 Indiana writers in this, but even the folks you've mentioned so far, you know, Kathy Day and Cole Porter, for that matter, growing up in Peru, Indiana, really small place,
yes,
all the way to the big cities. Is the theme of the book was it tied to the bicentennial? I don't know why
it's
I have that idea.
Well, it is, actually.
Okay.
We got a grant, one of the bicentennial Masterpiece grants. And so, yes, it's an official bicentennial legacy project, which we're very, very happy with. And I think it extends the appreciation of Indiana's rich literary heritage into now. We have a tendency to celebrate our dead authors a lot. And I think it's nice to celebrate some live ones.
I like that.
Yeah.
And also the theme, in a way, says I am convinced that it's a strength that we have to work harder. You know,
we do.
You know, we're not Portland, we're not Seattle.
That's right.
We're not Washington State. We're not.
But
Oregon.
You know what? Our writers are just as good.
Our writers are just as good.
We have amazing writers. And one of the things I did with this was I asked people to think about pieces to submit that would be accessible to high school students, not written for high school students, mm-hmm, but accessible to high school students. And I wanted it to be a way that Indiana teachers could introduce Indiana writers to their students, because we don't get that very much. And I'm really thrilled that Penn High School in Mishawaka just ordered 100 books.
Whoa.
And they're going to actually do a course. They're
so
going to
build a curriculum.
Yeah, they're going to build a class around it. So I'm really happy about that, and I hope to see more of that.
Yeah.
And more library purchases.
Pay attention, educators who are
there
listening.
There you go. Please talk to us. We have many ideas.
Absolutely.
And we're also creating a website for Indiana writers, so that students and teachers will have access to some contact information and bio information and a download of a sample. So
bring some of those writers to the classrooms.
Yes, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another collection that I was entranced by is called Finding the Words, Stories and Poems of Women Veterans. Where did that bubble up?
Yes, we have some funding from the Alan Whitehill Clues Charitable Foundation that we're really thrilled to have, because we've been able to do several memoir workshops, free memoir workshops. We did one for homeless women. We did one at the Julian Center for victims of domestic abuse. And the one that we just finished is one that we did with women veterans. It is absolutely fascinating. We have people from World War II all the way, you know, to a gunner in Iraq, a woman who, really was in combat in ways that women weren't in the past. So the stories are sometimes really raw and honest, and they develop this sort of amazing community among themselves of trust and just general interest. Nobody knows what it's like but them. And so they found this wonderful experience being together and then sharing this book of stories, which is called Finding the Words. And the instructor was our Indiana Poet Laureate Sherry Wagner, mm-hmm, who's just a wonderful instructor and editor. So it's a beautiful book of stories and poems that I would recommend to anybody.
So speaking of workshops and your instructors, I want you to if somebody's listening and saying, oh, Indiana Writer Center, it's just for, you know, people who are really great, people who are really professional, people who are already published. That is completely
Oh, that is so
untrue,
totally not
right?
true. No, not at all. Our classes work for for writers working at any level, most of our classes. We do have some workshop classes that are for more advanced writers, but the majority of our classes you can walk into if you've never written a word in your life, and you'll write something that day and come away with some ideas and some thoughts and ways to keep on writing. So we've got a boot camp coming up for new writers that starts, well, it'll be in January. So if you really are feeling anxious and you don't want to come into a class with others who've already written, come to that. That's going to be early in January. No, our classes are so accessible. What I love about the Writer Center is that the classes are both challenging, but they're within your comfort level. You know, they're not going to make you feel stupid. They're going to challenge you in a way that's going to make you feel smart. And you're going to say, I didn't know that I could do that. That's what we get all the time. And all of our classes are taught by published writers and very, very accomplished teachers.
Barb Shoup, Executive Director of the Writer Center of Indiana. That new anthology collects 78 Hoosier authors, and it's called Not Like the Rest of Us. Learn about classes for all levels of experience, including that beginning writer's boot camp that starts January 7th at indianawriters.org. For 50 years, Indy's own Duke Tomato's been making audiences smile and dance with his joyous take on blues music. And even now, as he approaches 70, Duke continues to work hard at his craft. He has a new album coming out in January, and he'll be headlining a CD release party at the Warehouse in Carmel on January 28th. The Art of the Matter contributor Mark Allen invited him in to talk about his new music and about his career.
So if your Wikipedia bio is correct, and there's no, telling if it is, you're 6 months away from turning 70.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes,
okay.
I am.
Well, that was right. So you're putting out, you put out a live album in the last year or so. You have a new studio album coming out. What's motivating you?
Well, to be honest with you, this is a rather personal thing, but I was planning to do a studio album in 2015. And in 2015, my son, who was an adult man, was hit, a victim of a hit-and-run accident, and virtually told it several times he was going to die. He was in intensive care for 3 months. And I, in the midst of recording this album, with this, and it's funny how it affected me, the family thing, all of a sudden I couldn't write. I could not write. I mean, I could write, if you say, write a song about beer drinking on Sunday, I could do that. But as far as sitting down and then writing songs, it was... It just wasn't going to happen. So we did the studio album, or did the live album, because I needed I was more looking for a piece to have out in the year to promote the band and move forward with it. Well, my son has since improved tremendously, and without even any kind of conscious thought pattern or extra application to it, all of a sudden I began writing like I was the fountain that was going to create the whole next movement to the symphony or something. It was really, really exciting time for me because I felt better about my life, my family, that sure. Kind of thing. It was a remarkable situation.
Yeah, and you said he's okay.
He's doing very well at this point, yes.
The songs aren't about that, though, right?
The songs, though, no. The songs are, in many ways, autobiographical. And there's a song on there called Muddy Waters Sing, which is actually a song about when I was 13 years old. I was with a kid that when I went to grade school with, and we went to we were playing on a Saturday, and we went with his family to go pick up another family member that was at the place where Muddy was playing. And I'm standing outside the screen door on a Saturday afternoon watching him play, and it was just like the most impressive thing I'd ever seen in my life. And 30 years later, I had a chance to talk to him about it, and it was a pretty dang interesting thing. But that's in there. There's a song in there about my grandfather. There's some relationship songs. The title tune of the album is, How Much Crazy Can You Take? And the byline, the hook phrase in the song is, it's sometimes it's not just about love, but how much crazy can you take?
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you go into music with the idea that you were going to be a working musician your entire life?
Well, in my case, I just started playing. And one thing led to another, and I'm a very spiritual guy, and I feel that it was the pathway that I was to take. Because every time I thought about doing something else, something happened in the music business that encouraged me and led me on. Now, the sidebar to that is that I always did exactly what I wanted to do rather than following a program, and there are there's a price to pay for that, but it's, I believe in the end it was the only way I could have done it. And it's, as I look at music, the way I played it, more as a calling than a profession that you're seeking out. All I ever wanted to be was the best guitar player I could ever be, and that was my goal.
Yeah, because I think about this because when I was a kid, and I would think about the musicians that I loved who were probably in their 20s, maybe in their 30s. I figured by 40 they'd all be retired,
or dead.
Yeah, many of them were, but living in their mansions and doing whatever. And the idea that people would be working into their 60s and 70s. Just seem incomprehensible.
Well, I said, my wife and I have had this discussion. She said, are you ever going to retire? I said, well, what am I going to do, sit around a room, play guitar for myself? Because that's what I do. That's what I do.
Right. Right. Let's talk about the new album. It's called Tell Me Again.
How Much Crazy Can You Take?
Okay. And why a studio album? I mean, you seem always very comfortable live. And the live albums really bring out your personality. But tell me about why studio.
Well, because in the studio setting, you can actually have control over a lot of aspects, things you can't have in the live. And I enjoy the live performances, too. But there seems to be some more of a sanctifying effect of your career if you have if you record this studio album, And the thing about it is, we do primarily original songs, except then there's one cover song on this album. But and so as a result, it's almost beneficial to take the original songs, put them on a recording, and then put them out that way first to enliven people, to get people used to the idea of what the songs are, get familiar with the songs that way. So, and it's you can do things in a studio and experiment in a studio and find things that you will, and find other things on a live job. They're two different atmospheres, but the concept of generating new music in a studio it works better in the long run for me.
Okay. And back to your bio, there's a quote at the end where you say, I've had a great life. If you get a chance next time around, pick Duke Tomato. It's a lot of fun. That would seem to be a violation of the tortured artist effect. So what do you know that tortured artists should know?
Well, everybody's different. The creative process of everyone's different. And everybody's life, the way the mechanics of their life are, and the way they look at themselves is different. You want to be a torture artist, go for it, man. This leads back to something else. I mean, I found out early on that, when I was playing, I started out playing with REO. Well, I found out that they wanted things that were different than I wanted. They did it great, and they're great. We're still friends, and they're wonderful guys. But they wanted a different perspective than I wanted. And I realized as I tried to do their perspective, as a young man, I was a very violent guy. I mean, I came from the south side of Chicago. I was stupid. I was aggressive. I was, a dumb Italian guy from the south side of Chicago. And all that stuff, as much as I regret some of the things I did, I also am glad that it made me not do things I knew I didn't want to do. I mean, I knew if I continued on that pathway, I'd be in prison, be a drug addict, or both. So it's, I was able to decide who I wanted to be. And I was through I spoke about my spiritual nature. I was allowed to do that. And it worked. It worked for me. I'm not knowing it would work for other people. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Get the chance. Try it.
So you rolled with the changes.
Yeah. Yeah. More or less.
More or less.
Why? Two, that's right. One, two, you know what to do.
Mark Allen with Duke Tomato. The blues legend will celebrate his new CD with a release party January 28th at the Warehouse in Carmel. Tickets are available at livefortheMusic.com. We'll be right back.
me howling bass, my legs get cold. Pass the threat back, cause that's so dang old. Funniest guitar player that you've ever seen, hey. You just don't mind because folks ain't spread the word. Believe me, though I just love to play.
You're tuned to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Phoenix Rising Dance Company is kicking off the new year with a concert January 6th through the 8th at Theater on the Square. I invited Executive Director Will Sears Watson, Artistic Director Justin Sears Watson, and dancers Katie Fallon and Andre Williams to tell me about the concert called Afraid of Americans.
I don't know where to direct this question, but I love the theme of your January concert, Afraid of Americans. Where did this start?
I think I started that.
Yeah.
We had been to see a movie. I don't even remember what the movie was. And the closing credits was David Bowie's I'm Afraid of Americans. Mm-hmm. And I looked at Justin, and he looked at me, and that was pretty much it, considering the political environment of the country we live in right now and everything. It has been a little scary over the last couple, the last year, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of went from there, from just that song, and then they started working on that piece, and then it became the overall theme for mm-hmm. the show.
So how do you start as a dancer, as a choreographer, as executive director? How do you translate these words into dance?
Will's the executive director, but I'm the artistic director and choreographer. So what I've been telling the dancers is that although the show is about the kind of political climate of the country, I think it's more about all the things that we think separate us are actually the things that really make us all quite the same.
For example?
For example, all the anger, the hurt, the fear that people are feeling right now. We think that that's creating the separation, but actually it's really uniting us all as a country, because although I may be blank and you may be blank, we still feel all these same feelings and emotions. So what I've been trying to tell the dancers is we've been kind of using more general emotions when we've been creating. For instance, the piece that we're working on, I'm Afraid of Americans by David Bowie, I actually had them come up with a phrase that I said, imagine that you're creating and you basically just have to create something that explains your feelings, how you feel right now, based upon how you see America. And so kind of using them to create as well.
Kitty, what was your first response to that assignment?
Dance is an outlet. It's a way to translate your feelings. So to be given the creative freedom by Justin we don't have words for it. We get to take our own feelings and put it into such a powerful piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's art.
Andre, when you were faced with that assignment, did you kind of replay in your mind arguments or some scene of anger in the past, either in your own life or something you witnessed, and try to translate that into a motion of your body?
I think for me it definitely had a lot to do with not just politically, but a lot of conversations that have been happening lately with certain people that I know, and using that to my advantage and trying to captivate how I felt in that moment when I may have been angry with that person, or I may have, agreed with that person. You never know what you come across with friends, that you have. So it's just really interesting to take that and translate it into that movement and try to digest and find out how you're really feeling. You find things that you never really imagined that were there.
Justin, is there a story arc to this particular piece or to the concert in general? Do you try to come from the conflict through working through emotions to some kind of a resolution?
That's very interesting, because this is very new to me, being in the artistic role, going from dancer to the to kind of artistic director.
Yeah.
So it's been very organic. But I actually was thinking about that before I got here. And there's one piece that we're doing, which I don't even think I've entitled it yet. We've just been calling it the name of the song. And in that piece, it's about 10 minutes long. And what's interesting to me is that we have these people that are all individuals. And they start together, but they start to separate and do different things, but then they all come back together. And there's decisions that are made that sometimes decisions that we make that we have no clue will affect someone else. And so kind of the, I think where I'm going is that individually, we feel like we're so separate. But like I said earlier, those are the things that bring us together. So really what I want to show in this is that, yes, we can go through anger, hurt, all these emotions, and that they can separate us and they can be horrible and they can be bad, but there can still be, at the end of it all, hope that will bring us together, because I think deep down that's what we all really want. We all want a better, quote unquote, America. And I think that my goal is to show these feelings and then at the end to kind of leave everyone with some hope that things will be better.
In America, no tricks at the wheel.
So, Jill, the Phoenix Rising Dance Company is a relatively young company, and they're, as we just heard in their conversation, they're very ambitious and eager to try new things.
Well, and a great opportunity for other people to try new things, too, if they offer the dance studio, the class, for anybody with all different kinds of pick your favorite dance genre and learn how to do it for
all,
the new
all
year.
The way from little teeny kids to seniors. So I love that. Sort of if you have any interest in moving your body, they've got something for you at their dance studio. Hey, you know what? There's other stuff going on. It may be officially winter now and cold. And we don't want you to cocoon, though. We have some things to lure you out on that calendar we call.
What'll we do?
What do you have?
Well, actually, kind of indoor-outdoor kind of thing. It's still going on down there in beautiful Garfield Park down on the kind of the south side of Indianapolis, just right outside of the downtown Indy. They are continuing to have their student, faculty, and staff exhibition, and it runs through January the 14th, a variety of different days. And what they do is all their members, the neighborhood, everybody that's taken pictures, painted things, made ceramics, all their objects are on display. And
wow,
it's a great coming together of the community. It's free. So that's another great opportunity for you to start your new year off right, too. And inside at the Garfield Park Arts Center, which a lot of people know about the gardens there, but they're not familiar with the center itself. So it's a great way to see that space, too. And they have all their information on their website, which is gpacarts.org.
Fantastic. And if the day you go it's feeling really chilly, head for the other side of the park and go in the conservatory where you can go in one room. And it feels like you're in, I don't know, South America, and it's hot and humid. So you can give yourself a little treat. They occasionally have hot yoga classes in the conservatory.
Be the perfect place to have it.
Exactly. The ISO is, for the third year in a row, doing its Midwinter Festival. This year it's called The Music of the Earth, and it features everything from Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copland to Richard Strauss's An Alpine Symphony, and, as you might imagine by the name of the festival, Mahler's epic Das Lied von der Erde, or The Song of the Earth. Beautiful, majestic work. But they're also, in addition to playing beautiful music at their home of Hilbert Circle Theater, they're having events throughout the city at places like Circle City Industrial Complex and Indy Reads Books and their Center for the Performing Arts and Marion University and even over at Ball State. And one of the events coming up, it's actually happening twice, is Yoga with the ISO. It's happening Monday, January 9th at 6:30 and Saturday, January 14th at 10 a.m., both of those classes at Hilbert Circle Theater. The ISO's principal flutist, Karen Evans-Moratz, and yoga instructor Laura Potter will lead two yoga classes like no other, accompanied by live orchestral music. You should bring a mat and you'll receive a buy one, get one Music of the Earth concert voucher.
everywhere but that warm room at Garfield Park.
They're doing their
yoga and music. Speaking of music, we just made it through the season of the Nutcracker. It's time for the Sound of Music come to town once again. It's coming January 10th through the 15th down at the Murat Theater at the Old National Center.
Love that. I just, not too long ago, one of the TV stations was running it as part of its holidays. Sound of Music, all Sound of Music all
the
time.
Go see it live.
Go see it live. Everything's better live. Hey, speaking of something that's better live, Common Prairie is doing Hearthside Suppers Tuesdays through Sundays, January 13th through March 12th. This is kind of a recreation of what people would have experienced in the early 19th century. You'll eat by candlelight, and the feast will be straight from the pages of 19th century cookbooks. You'll enjoy period-appropriate entertainment in the parlor and learn more about life in the 19th century from costumed hosts. You can find out about those. You do need to reserve ahead of time for those. You can find out about Hearthside Suppers at Connor Prairie's website.
You don't have to kill your own game, though, and you might have to wash the dishes, though.
Oh.
I don't know. Everybody had to pitch in back in those days,
indeed,
Sharon. You know that.
Indeed.
Also coming up down at Amoca, they moved out of the Murphy Building in Fountain Square. Their gallery is still up and going at Cityway Gallery right down there by the Alexander Hotel. They have a new exhibit. The Sarah Hobbs Show is opening on January the 8th. It's going to be up through June. She examines concepts that involve the human psyche. She sets up these living spaces, and then she takes pictures of them. And they're all different sizes, and they're very intriguing, and they're very conversation-invoking. So this would be a great place to stop. Or just with a bunch of friends. It's a beautiful, the Cityway Gallery for Indianapolis Museum of Contemporary Arts, a nice big space. Great place to get in from the cold down there in downtown Indianapolis.
Fantastic. Well, you know, we have lots more things to offer you, but don't forget you can hear more, learn more about local indie arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. And we want to wish you a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hope you'll join us again next week for that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, and I'm Sharon Gamble. Diane Martin is an Indianapolis-based writer, writing consultant, and film producer. Her newest project is a documentary about sudden loss and the deep grief that often follows. She's put out a call for people who have experienced personal loss, and I invited her to talk about what inspired this documentary and the kinds of voices she's seeking. So what was the genesis of the Grief Project? Tell me the story behind it.
Well, a few years ago, I worked on a book project, so I'll tell you a little bit about that because that is exactly how it started or it led to this. A group of men who have each lost a child meet every week. And how that started was two of them were introduced to each other because by a mutual friend who knew they had each lost a child, knew that it would be helpful for them to talk to each other. And so they just met for coffee, found it so helpful to be able to talk to somebody else who truly understood what they had experienced, what they were going through, and they started meeting every week. Not a formal group, just at a coffee shop every week. That group started growing over the years, and
still all men.
Still all men, because specifically men process grief differently than women. And that was one of the things that was helpful because mothers and fathers process grief differently. Men in particular don't seem to have the same support group. They're also not encouraged to be emotional publicly.
Sure.
So they tend to keep to themselves. So that was one of the reasons also that they found it so helpful. They met for several years. There wasn't any resource out there that they could find, like books or anything else that was helpful about stories about men and dads in particular.
Doesn't that kind of astonish you? I mean, it feels as though with what happened to psychology, the field of psychology and being more accessible to people of all kinds in the 70s and 80s, you'd think that would have been a topic that
absolutely.
Was explored.
Absolutely. It's natural. And once they discovered it, they thought the same thing. So they decided they wanted to share their stories, mm-hmm. just put their stories out there in a book for other dads to find. So they looked for somebody to help them do that. And I was the person that ended up doing that with them. That book is called Tuesday Mornings with the Dads. Mm-hmm. And it became distributed several years later. Another group formed essentially out of men who had been given that book or had discovered that book. They started forming a group in another part of Indianapolis and wanted to do a book as well, wanted to write their stories mm-hmm. and share their stories because they found it so helpful to do that. Also, part of the process of just the sharing is helpful. So I just finished that project this past spring. That book is called More Mornings with the Dads. So from that, during the process of working with these men and helping them write their stories are written by them. I was essentially an editorial safety net for them because they weren't writers. They felt more comfortable if they had somebody helping them. But the stories are written by them. But through that process, I found so many parallels between those who are in deep grief and the fact that it's isolating. Mm-hmm. Those who are in deep grief are isolated by it. They keep it to themselves. They don't have very many to be able to express it to. Initially after a loss, these were almost 100% regarding sudden losses. Initially after a loss, people tend to gather around the person who is grieving. But then after several months, they start drifting back into their own lives. And that person is left alone, essentially, to still deal with that grief because it doesn't just go away.
And often their circle doesn't really know how to help.
Right. Absolutely. That's a big aspect of it as well. So as I finished this project in the spring and saw these parallels, it came to me to do a project that would draw others into it, too, not only fathers, because I know that there were also moms and siblings and so on. And also I had friends who were going through losses and deep grief. And so I decided to do a documentary film that would that would include many voices for one thing. It's not going to feature just a few because mm-hmm. part of the important aspect is that it's so common. Most of us have either experienced a sudden loss and deep grief or we know somebody who has. So I want to show really how common that is and then highlight the parallels between those stories so that those who are grieving understand they're not alone. Even though they're experiencing that loss themselves by themselves, they're not alone in the sense of they'll see that others who are going through those same characteristics, the wild emotional roller coaster ride that, you know, there are stages. Sometimes you hear that there are stages of grief, and there are stages, but they could be all over the place. It's not just a pattern that each person works through and then they're out of it and then it's over.
It's not necessarily predictable.
Right. And that aspect of feeling like, oh, this is normal, because anything really is normal in deep grief. The emotion that somebody's feeling and experiencing, that's normal. And though not only does that person need to understand that and feel okay about that, but those around them need to also to have that insight to say, oh, it's not just this friend of mine or this family member of mine who's going through this and can't get past it. This is common. And to give them space to be able to process it. So for the project, there are three aspects, really. One is to be able to share what they're going through, just to be able to release that for whatever they need to do, but just to share their story and say, this is what I'm experiencing, this is what happened. Another is to honor the person that they lost, to be able to share the story in respect to that person and how important they were in their life. And then the third is to offer insight to others who are wondering how to help, because people are so genuine in wanting to help, but they don't know how to. And there's, when it comes down to it, there's no easy answer about that. But usually it's just be there. Just show up, Just listen if I need to talk. Let me talk about the person I lost. Don't shy away from that. A lot of times people get a little awkward about it. And I'd say that that seems to be the most common reason people don't speak up, don't say anything. They don't actually know what to say. And sometimes what they do say is awkward or not helpful. And it will just hopefully shed light for everybody involved in that and make that the relationships a little smoother and open that door for people to say, okay, I know you're going through something. Is there a way I can help? What can I do to help? And for those who are grieving to be able to speak up and say something to others and to not feel like, oh, gosh, I'm burdening somebody, to be okay about talking if it's a child that they lost, to say, you know, I don't want that person to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. That's often very significant. That's a concern that people will be afraid to say that person's name or to bring it up because it'll make the person who's grieving sad. And so, well, they're already carrying it around with them anyway. And it's not something that they just leave at the house. If somebody's gone through a sudden loss, they're taking that with them every day, even if walking up the sidewalk. And another aspect for this film in particular, it is specifically about sudden loss. And that's not to say that deep grief for other loss isn't as significant. It's just that with sudden loss, there's no opportunity to say goodbye.
Right.
There's no opportunity to tie up any kind of loose ends. It's just that relationship, the communication in that sense ended there. And that last conversation was the last conversation.
Writer and film producer Diane Martin. Her new documentary explores sudden loss and the deep grief that often follows. And if you'd like to be considered to be part of the film, drop Diane a line at dianemartin1@me.com. That's Diane with two N's and the numeral one, so dianemartin1@me.com. Carrington Clinton, the multiversed producer and musician better known as Clint Breeze, got his start the way a lot of the greats did, in church. A Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talked beats, R&B, and more with Clint.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto, and I'm here with drummer and beatmaker Carrington Clinton, better known to music fans as Clint Breeze. He has a remarkable new album out titled Nappy Head, and he also has five songs to share with us today. Before we jump into your five songs, Carrington, tell us about the theme of social commentary that permeates your new album, Nappy Head.
The overall theme or motif of the album is to symbolize the oppression of black people in America. I think with the record, I tried to do my best in letting people know how I felt through a large lens of different artists that I collaborated with. I tried to bring some sort of social consciousness of like, hey, this is what's happening. Why are we experiencing this? I'm letting you know how I feel, and this is the reality of what we live in.
All right, Carrington, you have five songs to share with us that have influenced your creative process. What's your first song?
I think the first one is Stevie Wonder, Heaven is a Zillion
Light Years Away.
Yeah. And this is always changing, but right now I like that song a lot. I think it kind of speaks right now, I think.
They say that heaven is 10 zillion light years away, and just the pure at heart will walk a righteous street someday. They say that
second song is How Much a Dollar Really Costs off of Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly. Yeah, first time I heard that, man, I was like, damn. You know?
How much a dollar really costs? The question is detrimental, paralyzing my thoughts. Parasites in my stomach keep me with a gut feeling, y'all. Gotta see how I'm chilling once I park this luxury car. Hopping out, feeling big as Mutombo. 20 on pump 6, Dirty Marcellus called me Dumbo. 20 years ago, can't forget. Now I can lend them my ear or two. How to stack these residuals tenfold. The liberal concept that men do. 2006, they didn't hear me. Indigenous African only spoke Zulu. My American tongue was leery. Walked out the gas station, a homeless man with a 70-10 complexion asked me what 10 grand stressing about.
Third song, I think, is one of the most representative songs of our generation.
La, la, yeah. La.
is Kanye West Can't Tell Me Nothing.
I had a dream I could buy my way to heaven. When I awoke, I spent that on a necklace. I told God I'll be back in a second. Man, it's so hard not to act reckless.
My fourth song is Heart Don't Stand a Chance by Anderson .Paak off of his new album, Malibu. And again, these are all songs that I've been impacted by lately, with the exception of Kanye West's Can't Tell Me Nothing. I just think that's a generational song to me.
See, I'll be catching you staring. Be careful, though. I don't mind. It's a dangerous place to be left in, but keep your eyes on me. Yeah, your heart don't stand a chance.
Your fifth and final song, Carrington Clinton.
My fifth and final song. That's a big question, bro. Master Teacher by Erykah Badu off of New America Part 1, Fourth World War. She has this motif towards the end of the song where she's like, I stay woke. And this is for those people that are like, I'm this and that and the other. I'm woke, I'm conscious. And it's like, it's bigger than that, you know? Like, you have to be aware and active, and you can't just be lazy about, like, I'm woke, I know government conspiracy theories. You have to be involved, aware, active in your community, and trying to make a change, you know.
Your baby ain't got no money to support you, baby. I stay woke. Even when the preacher tells you some lies and cheating on your mama.
And Carrington, as I mentioned, you have an incredible new album out called Nappy Head. Folks can go to ClintBreeze.com to hear that record. And you're also busy leading an amazing jazz band, Clint Breeze and the Groove. And where can folks keep up with all your activities?
I'm on social media, Facebook. You can look at my page, Clint Breeze. Twitter, it's Clint. My handle is Clint Breeze. Instagram, it's Clint Breeze for Prez. My website is ClintBreeze.com, and that's pretty much where you can keep up to date with me.
Cool, man. Thank you for the songs.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Kyle Long with Clint Breeze. Hear Kyle Long's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 9 and Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Mark Allen and Jill Dittmeyer. You can hear our program twice each week on 90.1 FM, Saturday mornings at 7 and Thursday evenings at 8. And if you hear something you like and want to share, go to WFYI.org for our podcast. Next week, we explore a bicentennial exhibition at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, catch up with composer Tyron Cooper, and learn about a local nonprofit created to promote Indianapolis music and musicians. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll we do? All that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.